Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Before we get started, I want to let you know today's program is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners, and I especially want to thank Christopher for his support, and we'll send access to our premium site, as we do with all donations of $7 or more. Well, folks, it's time now for us to first conclude Matter of Reasonable Doubt, and then later on in the series, in the show, we will wrap up our Carter Brown series, Belladonna Was Poison. But here now is The Matter of Reasonable Doubt, Part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
This is Mrs. Gramley, Mr. Dollar.
Oh, good.
I understand you were trying to reach me.
I just told your nephew, Walter, that if he didn't have you on this phone within 3 minutes, I'd be out there at the ranch with a posse of police.
Oh, I'm afraid there's some mistake, Mr. Dollar. You see, I told Walter I didn't wish to talk with you.
You what?
I admire your persistence, young man, but
are you saying this of your own free will? You're not being forced?
How ridiculous.
Who's there with you?
Just my nephew, Walter, and his wife, Hilda. Sure,
I'm coming out there, Mrs. Gramley.
Mr. Dollar, you were sent out here from Hartford to investigate an insurance trust I was arranging for my granddaughter. Well, I've decided not to set up the trust, so there's no further reason to involve yourself in my affairs. Good night, Mr. Dollar.
Hello. Hello.
What have you got cooking with the Gramleys anyway, Mr.
Shut up, Nicky. Let me think.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location Las Vegas, Nevada, to the home office Amicon Northern Trust Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, The Matter of Reasonable Doubt. Expense account, final page. Item 12, 75 cents. I had a pint of black coffee sent in for Nikki Vernon, girlfriend of missing casino operator Deuce McCoy. She'd been overworking a bottle of scotch, and I figured the coffee would help clear the fumes. And it might have, if she'd drunk it.
No, take it away. I don't want any coffee.
I couldn't figure that phone call from Mrs. Gramley. She knew her nephew and his wife had been stealing from her. That's why she'd started to set up the trust to save the estate from them and turn it over to her young granddaughter, Susan. And she knew also, Ab told her, that Walter and his wife had probably contrived the auto accident that had killed Susan's parents. And yet now she seemed to have reversed her whole attitude. Maybe Jonas Parks had been right. Maybe there was a reasonable doubt as to her sanity. Maybe a lot of things. But all of the answers were out there at that ranch.
She's to blame for it. Things were all right with Deuce and me till she came messing around.
If it hadn't been Hilda, it would have been somebody else.
The whole lot you know about it.
Oh, why don't you drink some of that coffee, Nicky?
I don't want any coffee.
Okay, suit yourself. Go ahead and enjoy your broken heart, then. Kill the rest of that bottle if that's what you want. Cry up a storm. Live it up. Wallow in it.
Get that dame. It's the last thing I ever do.
For what? You ought to thank her for getting that rat off your neck.
What'd you have to turn him in for? Deuce never did anything to you.
He never had the chance.
Well, what's he supposed to have done that's so horrible?
It's more what he tried to do.
Oh, sure.
You happen to know young Susan Gramley?
Yeah, I've seen the kid. Why?
Well, your lover boy phoned her out at the ranch earlier this evening, disguised his voice, said he was a friend of mine. He tried to get her to meet him on the old boulder cutoff out in the middle of the desert.
If you think Deuce would try to date up a 16-year-old kid, you're crazy.
Nicky, I think he was going to kill a 16-year-old kid.
It's her fault. Hilda Gramley. She and her sneaky little henpecked husband got Deuce mixed up in something.
I don't imagine he was very hard to mix.
That dame's been asking for it for a long time.
Yeah, I know, and you're about ready to give it to her. Well, forget it. Sober up, find the nearest exit, and then run like the devil.
I want Deuce.
So do the police. And they're the ones who are going to get him. They're covering the airport now, the depot, all the highways. Vegas is a tough town to get away from. He hasn't got a chance.
It's just as much your husband's fault. Why didn't he keep her at home? Why didn't he...
Oh, for the love of... You keep on playing that same old record, you're going to wear a groove right through your brain.
Maybe so.
Now, look, I got things to do. Are you going to be all right here alone?
No, I'm just fine. I never felt better in my life.
Then you've already got it halfway made. So why don't you double up and get even? Try some of that coffee.
You're a real busy guy, Mr. Dollar. You put the finger on a man with one hand, and at the same time, you try to sober up his girl with the other.
Sure. And if I had a broom, I'd sweep the office.
Mother, why don't you go be busy someplace else?
That's exactly the idea. All right, kid, you're on your own. Good luck, Nicky.
Good luck? What do you care what kind of luck I have?
Oh, I don't know. I picked up my car and drove out across the desert toward the Flint Rock Ranch. I couldn't quite imagine Mrs. Gramley being intimidated. The idea of Walter and Hilda standing over her, holding a gun at her head and making her say things against her will was pretty unbelievable. Faced with a threat like that, she'd probably say, shoot and be blasted. It just didn't make sense. Apparently, she really had reversed her field. But I had to hear it from her face to face.
Who is it?
Johnny Dollar, open up. I said open up.
What's the idea? Mrs. Gramley told you to stay away from here, didn't she?
I don't know. There was static in the phone. I want to hear her say it again.
You don't mind. What do you think you're doing?
Coming in. All right, Walter, let's go talk to Mrs. Gramley.
Look, Dollar, you haven't got that much weight to throw around.
Suppose we get it straight right now and save a lot of time. I came out here to talk to Mrs. Gramley, and I'm going to talk to her. Now, if you want to go at it bare-knuckle, let's get started. Or if you're thinking of that gun routine again, go ahead and pull it. I'm packing one myself. And if you're not going to make any kind of a move, then you just stand right there with your face hanging out while I go on
What's
in and talk.
What's going on in here, Walter?
Good evening, Mrs. Gramley.
Dollar won't take no for an answer. He just forced his way in.
I'm glad to find you looking so well.
I thought I'd made myself clear on the phone, Mr. Dollar.
Really? Come on, let's go on into the living room where we can all be more comfortable.
Come back here. I must insist that you leave at once.
Who was at the door? What are you doing here?
Well, if it isn't Hilda, the lovely lady who likes money, gifts, and excitement. Fine, fine. That's why I came out, to stir up a little excitement.
I think you're taking a good deal upon yourself, Mr. Dollar.
You know, I'm a little surprised at you, Mrs. Gramley. I thought you wanted me to follow the case through.
There is no case.
Oh, since when?
You heard what she said. That's what you came for. All right, now beat it.
Down, Walter. Mrs. Gramley, are you telling me you're going to drop this whole thing, let this pair here edge you out and Susan along with you and take the whole estate?
You can put any interpretation on it you like, just as long as you leave this house at once and please don't come back. You have no right to interfere.
And what about your son and his wife? Have you forgotten that those two leeches there killed them?
You're out of your mind.
Am I? What do you think, Mrs. Gramley? Am I out of my mind?
I'm afraid you are. My son and his wife were killed in an automobile accident. A terrible tragedy, but unavoidable.
Sure it was, after Walter and Hilda here set it up.
Will you please leave now?
Have they threatened you? Is that it? Are you scared to talk? Because if you are, speak up. I imagine I can handle them.
You're being quite ridiculous, Mr. Dollar. Will you now go, please?
It beats me. It really does. If I hadn't...
I'll answer. Hello? Who?
If that's for me, you better let me take it. They know I'm here.
All right. Take it. Nobody's stopping you.
It was Will Connors on the phone. He'd been keeping in close touch with the police, and he was calling to tell me what had happened. Deuce McCoy had been arrested. He'd been picked up at the airport trying to board a plane and was being taken to the city jail. I hung up the phone and told the three of them what Will had said. That touched off the fuse.
Arrested? Deuce has been arrested?
At the airport? I don't get it.
But you will get it, Walter. Deuce will talk. He'll spill the whole thing. And I think we'll be able to make a case against you and Hilda, even without Mrs. Gramley's testimony.
Susan, was she with him? Is she all right?
Mrs. Gramley, Susan has been in my hotel room with Will Connors for the last... So that was the hold they had over you.
They told me this man Deuce had phoned her and tricked her into meeting him.
Susan doesn't trick so easy. She called me
Get
and I...
Get your hands up, Dollar.
Oh, now it's a little late for a gun, Walter. You won't find it any easier to run than Deuce did.
He's right, Walter. Let me think. There must be
Let
some way...
Let you think. That's what I've been doing for the last 10 years, and you thought us right into this.
Walter!
The airport. You know what he was doing? He was running out. The kid didn't show. He knew something had gone wrong, and he was taking a powder. And not even telling me.
There's no time now
to... Left us here holding the bag. And now you say, let me think. Why didn't you think before? It was your idea, cutting him in on this.
Oh, she's got a lot of cute ideas.
Nikki.
She's a real little brain.
What the devil are you doing here?
Slumming, Mr. Dollar. The door was open, so I walked in. You mind?
Look, whoever you
Look
are...
Look what, sucker? I've seen guns before. Why didn't she use it on them? When they were playing you for their number one patsy.
What are you talking about?
Deuce McCoy. And that little sneak you're married to there. You mean you still don't know?
She's lying, Walter.
Don't you wish I was? They had you right in the middle, sucker. Deuce was taking it away from me on the tables, and little Hildy was getting it back from him after hours. I'll bet they got a lot of laughs out of it.
Better hand over that gun, Walter.
It's true, isn't it, Hilda?
Of course not.
Take a gun to him, huh? Well, maybe it's not too late.
Walter, what are you going to do?
Give me the gun, Walter.
Sure. Why not? I don't need it now.
He killed her. His own wife. Stood right there and shot her down in cold blood.
Would you call the police, Mrs. Gramley?
Yeah, tell them to hurry right out. They can take me in on a real charge now.
I didn't mean for her to get killed.
You know something, Dollar?
No. Suppose you tell me.
That's the first big move I've made in the last 10 years. That Hilda didn't plan.
Expense account item 14, $305.20. Hotel and incidentals in Las Vegas and transportation back to Hartford. Expense account total, $596.45. End of account. Remarks? Well...
I can't figure out why she had to go messing around that way when she already had a man of her own, her husband. Of course, it didn't amount to much, but not many men do. What do you expect to find in this world? Pearls in all her oysters? A turkey in her soup?
Well, that was Nikki, and that's the report. And that's life. Come to think of it, though, what isn't? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's intriguing story.
Next week, Indestructible Mike, the most amazing character I ever met. A man with 9 lives, at least. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Susan Whitney, Richard Crenna, Jeanette Nolan, Forrest Lewis, Inga Adams, Paul Richards, and Gene Tatum. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino and Carl Fortina. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking. We'll be right back.
Arthur Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
Any actor worth his soul is generally nervous before a performance is due to begin. But this performance was something extra special. And so were the butterflies in my stomach. Because this program of There's No Future in Murder, which starred me, Rockstone, as television's Inspector Rockstone, was going to be devoted to disclosing the murder of Hannah Vogue, I hoped. That was why only part of the show had been planned, the early part. The rest of it had to be an impromptu affair with me in charge and with music improvised from the orchestra whenever I gave the signal. The signal was to be each time I scratched my ear. I only hoped the viewers wouldn't think their favorite cop had suddenly gone deaf.
15 seconds. Everybody quiet.
I watched our sponsor, Aldous Lacey, bracing himself as he faced number one camera. The orchestra leader stood with his baton raised as the seconds ticked away. And then, the show was underway. As the music hit its familiar theme, I knew the title cards would be flashing onto the screens of a million TV sets, and I mentally crossed my fingers.
My name is Aldous Lacey. I have the privilege tonight of introducing a special program of There's No Future in Murder. As sponsor of this series, Lacey's Departmental Store is proud to align itself with justice-loving people everywhere in an effort to solve a terrible crime, the murder of Hannah Vogue, whose body was found in our special display window last Thursday morning.
From then on, things went smoothly. This was the part that had been planned, rehearsed. Photographs flashed onto the screen of the window with the body in it. I did my commentary, then hurried over to set one to reenact the finding of the body with Arlene Malden and Sheep, the store manager. Then I scratched my ear for the orchestra leader. While the orchestra added some grim, ominous music, I raced over to camera outside set 2, Inspector Rockstone's office, and faced it ready for the red light. Ladies and gentlemen, you have seen the discovery of the body of Hannah Vogue. In my office, which I shall enter in a moment, a group of people have been gathered. I shall interview them. You have seen me do this many times, but I ask you to remember that tonight I am not an actor playing a role. I am a man, a citizen, trying to solve the murder of a beautiful girl. I am really you, a part of you. I am a conscience, yours and mine. The conscience of a city raising its voice to demand that justice should be done and the evildoer brought to a reckoning. All right, ladies and gentlemen. You all know what has happened. I am going to question you about the murder of Hannah Vogue. I know I have already asked you many questions in the last few days, but this time I shall be asking them in an effort to build up a pattern, a picture of Hannah Vogue's life, and perhaps because of that, a picture of her death, of why she had to die. Firstly, Mr. Lacey.
Me?
You are Aldous Lacey, managing director of Lacey's Departmental Store.
Why, of course I am.
You knew the deceased, Hannah Vogue?
Yes, I knew her.
How much were you paying a month for the rental of her apartment? There is no point in hiding this, Mr. Lacey. You freely admitted to me in your office that you had been interested in the girl.
How much? $200 a month.
You knew she was an unsuccessful actress?
Yes.
Did you order Sam Long, the writer of the series, to see she was engaged for one of the shows?
Now, look, I don't see
Please answer the question, Mr. Lacey.
Well, I suppose if a man sponsors a show, what's wrong with seeing that someone he's interested in gets a chance?
Nothing, Mr. Lacey. Did you think there was?
Why, you...
The night before her body was found in the window. Wednesday night. Did you see her that night?
Oh, we had dinner, and then she had to leave.
You didn't go with her?
No.
Thank you. Miss Shaw, please.
Yes, Inspector Stone.
Your name is Lois Shaw, and you're a friend of Hannah Vogue.
That's correct.
You were staying at her apartment the night before the murder.
Yes, I was.
When did you last see her alive?
That evening. She left about 6:30. She said she was going to dinner. She never came back.
Thank you, Miss Shaw. Mr. Lacey, this girl was living in an apartment rented by you. She knew you very well. Well enough to realize you had a secret. She found out that secret. When you discovered she'd found out...
It's a lie. I had no secret. I had nothing to be ashamed of to be kept hidden.
Didn't you, Lacey? Suppose I were to remind you of an investment you made a year ago.
Investment?
A short-term investment with high return. An investment placed in the hands of Tony Segura, advisor to a group of men commonly known as the Syndicate. An investment with no papers signed and paid back to you, capital and interest, only last month. Wasn't that what you wanted kept quiet? That a supposedly respectable businessman like you had invested money in the Syndicate?
Well, why should I want to keep it quiet?
Oh, come, come, Mr. Lacey. Even a child has some idea of what the name Syndicate means today. That was your secret, wasn't it? The secret Hannah Vogue discovered. The secret which cost her her life.
I didn't kill her. I didn't kill her.
Now, a few questions for Mr. Long.
Okay.
You are Sam Long, the writer of There's No Future in Murder.
That's right.
Wasn't Hannah Vogue the name your wife used as an actress?
Yeah.
But you and your wife quarreled, and she left you some time ago. Why?
Because I wouldn't chisel her apart on this program, that's why.
And then, some months later, Lacey ordered you to find her a part in the show.
Yeah. Me, the guy she was married to who lost her because he wouldn't do just that.
Did you ever see your wife again?
Once. Last Tuesday night after last week's show. She came to see me. Told me she'd found out something about Lacey. That she was afraid he knew she'd found out. She asked me for advice. Said she was scared and what should she do.
And what did you tell her to do?
She was still my wife. She'd run out on me. She was living in an apartment paid for by another man. She'd got him to get her into the program, and then she came running back to me and asked me what she should do. I told her to get out of my apartment and never come back. That's what I told her to do. That was the last time I saw her alive.
I see. Thank you. Now, Mr. Sheep.
Yes, Inspector.
You are the manager of Lacey's departmental store.
That's right, Inspector.
Mr. Sheep, when you helped Mr. Lacey carry the corpse into the store window, did you take the head or the feet? Well, Mr. Sheep?
Oh, the shame of it. I've worked for the Lacey's for 30 years. I've never had anything but respect and admiration and loyalty for them. He swore to me he hadn't killed her. But if the body were found in his apartment or his car, it would mean ruin for him, for the store, all the employees. I had to help him for their sake.
So you broke open the steel shutter on one of the loading docks to get in?
No, that was only to fool the police. We used my keys. I knew where the watchmen would be. It wasn't hard to avoid them. Oh, the shame of it.
Yes, Mr. Sheep, the shame of it, when honest citizens turn to crime. But I notice the shame is only felt when you're caught.
I'd like to make a statement, if I may.
Yes, Miss Shaw, go ahead.
You must be wondering, Inspector Stone, just where I fit into all this.
I have been puzzled by it, Miss Shaw.
My real name is Lois Birkinshaw. And for the last 3 years, I've been employed by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
You're an FBI agent?
Yes. The Bureau has long suspected that prominent businessmen all over the country were investing money in the local organizations of the Syndicate. This practice was not only immoral, but near criminal, and was also defrauding the inland revenue of taxation on the profits. I'm one of the agents whose task it was to obtain evidence of this in the hope of stamping out the practice.
So that's how you knew about Kathy?
Yes, Miss Morgan. That's how I was able to furnish Inspector Stone with the details of Mr. Lacey's dealings with the Syndicate through Mr. Segura.
It was part of your job to get close to the Syndicate?
Yes. And I also became friendly with Hannah Vogue in an attempt to pin the charge on Aldous Lacey.
Thank you, Miss Birkinshaw. Now we better clear up something with Miss Malden.
Yes, Inspector.
You are Arlene Malden, the producer of the show.
Yes.
The name you mentioned a moment ago, Kathy, was the name of your sister who was recently found drowned in San Antonio?
That's right.
Isn't it a fact that your sister had been living under the protection of Aldous Lacey?
Yes.
That he'd thrown her over and she wrote you a letter saying she knew something about him and intended to make him pay for it?
Yes.
You destroyed that letter and said nothing about it in the coroner's court for lack of proof and to avoid scandal.
That's correct.
No, it's a lie! You witch, you lying devilish...
Take it easy, Lacey. You're going to need all your strength for the trial.
All right. It's true, part of it. Kathy did find out about the money I'd put into the Syndicate. I killed her. I was desperate. We went swimming and I held her head under the water. But when I got back here, I had a visit from her sister, from Arlene Malden, with the copy of a letter from Kathy giving her the story.
What? You didn't destroy the letters? And you didn't tell me about the most important one?
No, because she wanted to use it for blackmail. I've been paying her $1,000 a month to keep her from showing that letter to the San Antonio police.
It's a lie. A fantasy. I never took a cent from him in my life.
The account is in the Carly branch at a Devonport bank in the name of Arlene Strang.
What about Hannah Vogue?
Well, she found out, too. I nearly went out of my mind. I couldn't kill again, but I couldn't afford to pay two lots of blackmail. I told Arlene Malden. She laughed at me. Called me a spineless weakling.
He's making it up. He killed Hannah Vogel. He's trying to fix it on me.
You won't get out of it like that. You told me to bring her over to your apartment that Wednesday night. You made me make an excuse to leave her for half an hour. And when I came back, Hannah was dead. You'd poisoned her.
That's when you got Sheep to help you put the body in the window before thinking of a better way of disposing of it.
Yes, I wish I were dead.
Mr. Lacey, I prophesy you'll get your wish. And Miss Malden will be right alongside you.
That's ridiculous. You've got no proof. Lacey's lying his head off.
I don't think so. And that letter he spoke of, the copy which you showed him, must still exist in the original, and the police will find it. That, I think, ladies and gentlemen of our audience, is the finish of this program. There's no future in murder. I've only one announcement to make. I said before that I was an actor, a man whose conscience was part of your conscience, those of you who are watching me now. This program was brought to you tonight by your own faith and honesty, sponsored by your pride in your city and its people. When something like this program tonight can happen, and does, our city is a good place to live in. Good night. I nodded to the orchestra leader for the closing theme music of the show. Then suddenly the police appeared with Inspector Jakes in charge, and Arlene, Lacey, and Sheep were taken off. And Sam was at my elbow.
Nice work, Rock. You wrote a good script, and off the cuff. Better than I could have done. Oh, it was a colossal show.
Yeah? Hey, don't you realize what I've done? I've just sent my sponsor to the electric chair.
I wouldn't worry too much about that. If those phones aren't running hot with prospective new sponsors, I'll go back to writing copy for commercials.
Hey, I never thought of that. Well, what do you know? Arlene always wanted this show to get top rating, and it took a murder she committed herself to do it.
This is Carter Brown. Well, I guess after that story, nobody's going to want me to write for TV. But you know, I agree with my hero. There's no future in murder, except in writing about it. And it's fun, too. I'll be back again with another story for you, called Hazard in Hong Kong. And the hero's name is Tony Masters. Or at least, that's the name he finds himself settled with. If you're listening, you'll find out why. Meanwhile, this is Carter Brown saying, so long for now. Be seeing you.
In Belladonna Was Poison, you heard our star Frank Waters as Rock Stone. The Carter Brown Mystery Theater, based on the best-selling novels by Carter Brown, is dramatized and directed by Maurice Travers for Grace Gibson Radio Productions.
Welcome back. Well, I kind of figured from the get-go with her hesitation that the whole reason the grandmother was trying to call Johnny off was because of the granddaughter. That, I think, would be the only thing that would really get her scared. I definitely missed having the granddaughter in the episode. She was the highlight of the whole serial, but I understand the way that it worked out. Still, the granddaughter would have been nice to have her. I also thought it was interesting to have Nikki kind of deliver the closing lesson to the story. While she wasn't a particularly nice person, she was a little bit more normal and a little wiser than the main characters Johnny encountered in the rest of the story. All right, well, now it's time for us to take a listen to Belladonna Was Poison, Part 4. Welcome back. So our story comes to a close, and I have to admit that this was probably my least favorite of the Carter Brown stories so far. I think the concept was interesting, but that's really about as far as it went. The way they kind of brought it about was a little ludicrous, but that could have worked. The Carter Brown mysteries have had somewhat over-the-top conclusions, which, while not dramatically perfect, are certainly interesting to listen to. This one, it just felt like the end was just kind of a letdown. The way that it came through, A lot of things just end up not making sense. The big thing is that with both the producer and the sponsor connected to the murder, both of these people were the ones that approved the special episode, which raises a big question as to why they would do that. Now, there are two possibilities. I think it'd be fair for them to expect that Rock Stone would not capture them. But if that didn't happen, then it would be a pretty big embarrassment for their series and their brands in which they're invested. If, on the other hand, he somehow managed to catch them, well, it would be the death penalty. So why do you go ahead and encourage this and act like it's a good idea? But beyond that, you know, and to me, it may just be the radio adaptation of the Carter Brown mystery. Since we don't really have the book handy, we can't really judge whether it was a bad book from the start or just poorly adapted. But poorly adapted in the sense that, unlike other characters, we didn't really get a feel for what this guy was about. You know, there's a lot that could have been done dramatically and comedically, with this actor having to play a detective, the role that he actually played on TV. In the end, we just don't get any of that. But hopefully we'll do better with our next serial, which won't actually be the one they announced. Next week, we'll bring you The Lady Was Lethal. Now we turn to listener comments and feedback, and I have a review of the iTunes app by Brian Hates Ducks in the iTunes store. Great app. I love old-time radio detective shows, and Adam's hosting is a perfect complement to them. Not many of my friends or people I associate with like old-time radio like I do. Adam almost makes me feel like I have a buddy to talk to about them with. Well, thanks so much, and I think that's definitely one of the benefits of the hosting, because so few people remember this or remember it to the same degree. You know, some people have memories of the shadow, you know, just vague cultural references of that, but all the other things, Mr. Moto, what, A Life in Your Hands, and Johnny Dollar, hard to find. So, I'm glad that we've got the Facebook page and we also just have the show so, we can kind of connect together and enjoy them together. Thanks so much for the comment, Brian. And, finally, we have a comment on Podcast Alley. Great show and great host who adds a lot to the shows. Well, thanks so much. All right. Well, that will do it for today. Join us back here on Monday when we start another Johnny Dollar serial. Friday, we begin The Lady Was Lethal, which will hopefully be better than this week. And then be sure and listen tomorrow as we bring you the lineup. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.